We have been doing a series on competition, and the theme of the last couple episodes have been like different types of culinary competition. We did Angela Sosa from Top Chef. We did Ed Leonard from the Culinary Olympics, and figured we'd reach out to you with the Bocuse d'Or perspective and just kind of how that's the impression that that's kind of had on your life and your career. And obviously want to catch up with you and see how the restaurant looks amazing and to see how things are going. So we can kind of kick it off for those of our listeners out there that don't know your background and story, if you can kind of maybe give us a summary of who you are and what you do, we'll start there.
Yeah, I'm Philip Tessier. Glad to be with you guys here today. My journey is kind of been one from, the early days growing up in Williamsburg, Virginia, traveling to CIA in New York, spent about 3 years there, and then found my way to France for about 6 months before landing back in New York City. Kind of ended up working for Eric Rappaire for 3 years at Le Bernardin. And then when Per Se opened in 2004, that was kind of the start of my journey with 10 years of working for Thomas Keller.
Wow.
Between Per Se, Boucheron, and French Laundry. So jumped from there, kind of a long winding path to finding myself somehow competing for Bocuse d'Or back in 2015. Kind of happened, really I wasn't pursuing, the competition side of the world, but had been watching Chef Keller's efforts and, some of the teams, including yours in 2013. And then, as you know, what happens, you kind of catch the bug, and you're like, I gotta do this thing. So, I was kind of really just, I think one of the biggest factors was just the patriotism behind it, the opportunity to, and responsibility, of representing, our country in the U.S., on a global scale. So for me, that's always kind of been, the catalyst, beyond the personal realm, and the opportunity to learn and grow is just the kind of task at hand, that I feel we have as chefs to represent ourselves and our cuisine and the country we come from.
Wow. I mean, to get started in your career, working with like two icons, two pillars of the fine dining world, Chef Eric Rappaire and Chef Thomas, is like, wow, it's almost like, where do you go after that? what experience right. could you go? I mean, it's like no other kitchen's ever going to be the same. So I didn't realize that was, I knew obviously you worked with Thomas, but I didn't realize that you spent that long, 3 years with Chef Eric. That's pretty impressive. Well, fast forward to today, how did the whole concept with Press Restaurant, how did get started and where about the restaurant?
Yeah. Kind of an interesting journey there. I mean, I set out to open my own restaurant, basically in 2017, right after, we took gold, and after finishing the book, that was kind of the goal, was to, take a pause on Bocuse d'Or, pursue my own goal. I'd kind of been doing some, other projects. And then, I set out to open my own restaurant. We had a opportunity in Yountville, right down the street from Chef Keller, which in hindsight, maybe wasn't the best idea, but, I took a job at Press here in St. Helena as a consultant. I was supposed to be doing 30 hours a week, bring in my chef de cuisine, Daryl, who was going to be, kind of running the kitchen. So I'd just be consulting on the menu and things, and then working on the new project. That was supposed to last about 4 or 5 months. And then one thing led to another, and the opportunity we had in Yountville sort of fell through. Chef Keller purchased that property. And then kind of the conversation just started of, what do we do at Press? And, the reality was, like, Press at that point had been started by Leslie Rudd, who, many might know him from, his standard beverage distribution company in the Midwest, or, he started Dina De Luca, among other chains. And so, he's kind of a, an entrepreneur icon out here. And unfortunately he had passed away a couple of years before I joined Press, which is the restaurant he started, kind of a, a gathering place among the vintners, et cetera, in Napa Valley. And so when I came in, it had been, you know, through a series of chefs before me, it was kind of honestly in disrepair. And the concept was just kind of a steakhouse at the time. And so, you know, at first it was like, all right, let's make this a better version of itself. And then over time, you know, once I realized like, okay, there's an opportunity to work here with Samantha Rudd and her husband, Mason, who now, you know, took over from her father. You know, the concept, the idea is a lot different. And so, you know, over the past few years, they've kind of just given me free run. And, you know, we've survived the COVID world and a thousand different iterations of ourselves, you know, through that, but it really gave us an opportunity to connect with the community. So I think all together we did, you know, about 25,000 meals for Boys and Girls Club and firefighters and other things happening in the Valley here. So wow. I think it's really been impactful, just, you know, kind of recognizing, you know, the role and opportunity we have, you know, as a business, as chefs, you know, in the community. So that's been great. It's been a crazy winding road from consultant and crisis management to, you know, really just in the last year, I would say kind of shifting to a direction where we're much more of looking to be, you know, one of the premier Napa Valley restaurants, destination location, kind of a, you know, much more, you know, modern American. Really, we're kind of just trying to avoid any labels, you know, and just kind of have, you know, free reign to do what we want in terms of the cuisine. So, you know, there's always a nod towards the history here and some of the sort of steakhouse side of it, you know, with our relationship with Brian Flannery, who many know as a premier dry ager out here. And this was actually the first restaurant he ever worked with. So, you know, we have a relationship that's really strong with him. And, you know, the big part of who we've been for many years has just been the wine program that we have, which we just received the grand award from Wine Spectator last month, which is,
wow, you know, really,
yeah, thanks. Really, really exciting for us. And, you know, I think one of our main goals is just to put, you know, Napa Valley, you know, on the map and really showcase what Napa Valley is and what it stands for. And, you know, it's really amazing here. Just, you know, the wines that we pour in the room, and a lot of times those same winemakers are sitting in the chairs. So, you know, we have a really, you know, organic sort of vibrant, you know, vibe here that, you know, sometimes, you know, a guest will come in, they'll be celebrating their wedding, and, you know, Opus One winemaker is there, and we'll open a bottle of wine and pour it for them, you know? So it's just kind of a fun, unique setting that you just really couldn't get anywhere else. And, yeah, I think our main goal right now is just to really establish a sense of place. You know, you're here dining with us. That's the most, you know, iconic, memorable moment of enjoying Napa Valley cuisine and wine. So yeah, we're on the journey to get there.
So Phil, and I feel like, you know, from knowing you over the years, particularly through Boku's Door, it's been cool to watch from a distance. And especially even kind of through the pandemic, how I feel like you really kind of brought the DNA of the restaurant to life. Like, you kind of really, now when you go to the Instagram page or you go to the website, like, it feels like there's now more of a story, more of a theme. So congratulations. You know, a lot of people, they see the after effect, but they don't realize what goes into that, you know, the thought process. And then also dealing with, you know, a brand that was already established, you had customers, and, you know, it's kind of a, you know, I kind of think back of the years at the Greenbrier and trying to change the menus. And, you know, there's some people want to see change, other people not so much. So it's a delicate balance, but you've really done an amazing job. And I know you have an amazing team there as well that have contributed to all that. Your past training, You had the unique perspective of competing in the Boku store as a competitor, as the team chef. But you also were a coach and with Matthew Peters and ultimately coming back and getting the top tier, the podium, which was an amazing time. You've had these amazing fine dining experiences with working with such iconic chefs. How do you feel like that's kind of, that experience has kind of shaped your style? Because I feel like competing there and doing competition, there's a lot of parallels to like the discipline, the sense of order, the exactitude. You know, people look at some of the, and I know from working with you, just seeing some of the dishes, a lot of people they can't even imagine how you would even put something like that together. But I look at what you're putting out in the restaurant now, and I think it's from a different perspective. It's the same thing. It's like, wow, how do you do that in a restaurant and be able to get it to look that beautiful and taste that great? How do you feel like that high level of training has kind of shaped your style today, and are there other things that have kind of contributed to your style?
Yeah, I think it's, I don't know. I remember, you know, being a young chef and, you know, watching all the chefs who've been to school and were well accomplished. And you're like, man, I just can't wait till I know how to do everything like these guys do, you know? And I think that's the reality is like, I'm still waiting for that moment, you know, despite all the experience you had, you know, it's you still find yourself, you know, in a state of learning. And I think, you know, What I love is being able to pull from my experience and what I know, but challenging myself not to stay there, you know, and to really pull from the rest of the team, the influence of, you know, my sous chef from Mexico City, from another sous chef from El Salvador, you know, and be able to kind of bring a sense of refinement. You know, I think if I would define what we do here in just simple terms, you know, it's sort of the approach of having sort of a sense of refined simplicity. You know, the technique behind everything is, you know, I don't consider it complicated. I'm sure others do, but you know, it's kind of giving a sense of showcasing things in a simple but refined way. You know, we're a big restaurant, so you know, we'll do over 200 covers in a night, and
wow,
you know, it's a kitchen that's in desperate need of a remodel. So that's the next step in our journey, hopefully. But you know, it's kind of outperforming what we've been given, which has always been our MO, you know, especially with Bocuse. Just, I mean, you know how it is, you're kind of carving out your own path and, you know, trying to, you know, overachieve basically. So I think in terms of a style and the food that we do today, you know, obviously taking influence from my time working with Eric Rivera, Thomas Keller, and then, you know, also just challenging yourself, like I can't become a copy of those guys, you know?
Right.
So, you know, I think this is really the first moment, you know, where I'm kind of like really defining like what is, you know, my style, what is that look like, you know, from our side. And I'm actually really, really happy with where we're at right now and kind of the way things have come together, the sort of, you know, nod that we have towards the history of this restaurant, towards where I've come from, but, you know, sort of creating its own identity, you know, at the same time, which I think is really important. I think there's, you know, obviously a lot of restaurants that are iterations or copies in some form of where people have come from. So, you know, especially with my proximity to, you know, the French Laundry epicenter of Yountville, you know, it's just, we have to be different, you know, we have to showcase that in a different way. But I think the competition landscape, you know, and that experience, that effort, you know, I think, I don't feel like it influences the food as much as the culture and the mindset, you know,
right.
we talk to the team all the time about, you know, a winning mentality, you know, and just what is our response when things are difficult, you know, and how do we look for the solutions rather than dwell on the problems. And I think that makes all the difference in the world. And, you know, it's incredibly hard, especially when there seems to be way more problems than solutions on any given day, you know. So I feel like, you know, we're still, you know, this is kind of the starting point for us in terms of what we hope to do. And, you know, as you mentioned, the team here is pretty extraordinary and it's taken, you know, some time to build and put together. But, you know, we're really looking, you know, forward to, you know, new projects, you know, reigniting Bocuse d'Or again, you know, with hopefully some of our team. So that's kind of a big goal, you know, for us as well as we move forward.
Wow.
Chef, I have a question. How did Bocuse d'Or change coming from those chefs that you were working before Bocuse? How did that change? How Bocuse d'Or impacted your life after you competed?
Yeah, I think somebody asked me that recently, and I feel like the impact was slow to be realized a little bit. You know, I think, you know, Boku's Door was like, what is this thing? You know, nobody really knows. And then we took silver. Everyone, this came out of left field. Nobody expected us to win. You know, people probably didn't even know we were doing this. And, you know, I think the ongoing effort and journey with Matthew and coaching and doing the book has really kind of solidified, you know, that relevance of the Boku store and the impact it has here, you know, in the US. And, you know, our goal is to continue to grow that. But, you know, aside from that, I think personally, you know, it did two things. I think one, like while I was competing and doing this, is like the first time, like this is me, right? Like this is representation of myself, my food. Like obviously there's the influence and effort of all the coaches and everyone involved, but you know, you're the only guy standing there cooking that day aside from myself, right? And Skyler as the me. So I think that was kind of the point where, like, you know, you're no longer dependent on the systems and history of, you know, the chef you're working for and trying to fit into their box. You know, you're creating your own. It's up to you. And so I feel like after that, you know, that kind of gave me the confidence of, like, you know, who I am as a chef in a sense, really kind of kicking you out of the nest and doing it on your own and having to learn to, you know, not only fly, but soar. Right. And I think also the mentality, you know, for me has been just, I think that affirmation from the community, especially the community of chefs in the culinary world, you know, where there's an immediate respect and recognition, you know, for what that effort is, you know, the same you would see and give to, you know, Michelin star chefs, and especially on the 2-3 star level. And so, you know, I think that's where, you know, that's kind of where the shift has come in, you know, from that sense of recognition and giving me more of a platform to work from. You know, and I think not just in the community, but as we've gone to look to start a restaurant or work with the Rudd family here at Press, or, you know, in conversation with investors or others, you know, people see that, okay, you're somebody who finishes something, you know, right? That you're willing to put in the effort, you know, right? You're willing to go the distance. And, you know, I think that's something I wouldn't say jealous, but sometimes I look at what other people are doing. I'm like, oh man, they're, you know, wow, that's really amazing. And then you just stop and realize, like, I think for me, what the difference is sometimes is we're looking to build sustainability. You know, I want Press to be here for 25 years. You know, I don't want to be a flash in the pan excitement, you know, in 2022 or 2019 or 2025. You know, we want to be, you know, a consistent opportunity for, you know, chefs and young cooks to come here to learn and grow, to have an impact on our community, and not just to, you know, kind of showcase what we do and really in a you know, kind of more generic way, but to be more sustainable, to be, you know, more influential over time. And that's really kind of what, you know, my goal is to kind of build. You know, I think, as you guys know, like when you want to get involved in the Boku store, you're like, what do I do? Like, where do I go? Like, there really isn't a clear answer to that. And so for me, it's to build that opportunity here where people know, if you want to get involved in this competition, you come here. We have structure for that. We support candidates to do so. And not just Boku store, but San Pellegrino or, you know, Chef de Rotisserie, other things like this, where, you know, I'm not a huge believer in being a competition chef. You know, I'm a believer in being a chef, and competition being, you know, something that's really a catalyst to understanding your full potential. You know, I still look back at the year when I competed and just, like, you know, I think I was in the best physical, mental, emotional shape ever in my life, you know, yeah. Because it just focuses you. You know, it just focuses you on one singular task, and the ability to reach that level, you know, influences everything in your life after that, because you know you could reach that level, you know. That's but amazing. You also know the incredible discipline it takes to get there, and sometimes you're like, ah, so hard.
I think it also, there are a lot of tools that it develops that you kind of reach in and use again throughout your career, you know, whether it's organizational skills or As you mentioned, like just execution, like getting things done, like that's not an easy thing to do. A lot of, especially in this industry where you got, you know, curveballs getting thrown at you like right and left. It's hard to stay focused. So I think that creates like a very like sharp, disciplined individual. And I think, you know, you're obviously, I mean, I could tell working with you in the very beginning, that you had the foundation of what it took to be a winner in that competition. And I think the Boku's Door going through the competition, it hones those skills like razor sharp, and you kind of always have them then after that. They may not, you know, be used as frequently, at least not all at the same time, like they were during that, the year of the competition, but, you know, you use them for forever. Hey everybody, I want to take a second to say thank you to our sponsors. This show is brought to you by the following partners. Meat and Bone. These guys are just doing an exciting thing in the Miami and Florida area. Check out their website. They offer premium quality meats hand-delivered to your door if you live in the Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach area. But also, they ship nationally. And you can also visit them at some of their boutique locations in the Florida area. These guys came up to our recent barbecue class and they brought all sorts of amazing cuts of meat, steaks, brisket. Listen, if you're looking for quality steaks like you would get in a restaurant, check these guys out. They've got some incredible selection and top-notch quality. Check out their website. Also, Ovention Oven. These ovens are just incredible. We've used these during the pandemic. They really helped us kind of pivot and reposition ourselves so that we were able to expand our menu without having to make expensive investments in the kitchen. These ovens offer an innovative solution to restaurant operations, opening up a whole new realm of possibilities with your menus. The Ovention ovens are ventless. They're fast and operationally friendly in cooking. What we do is we program our recipes in the oven and our cooks just press a button of the image of what they're going to cook. It's a whole new way of cooking. Check out their entire line of Ovention ovens. And of course, Steelite. Steelite International has remained an incredible partner of Rosendale Collective. They are an internationally world-leading manufacturer of award-winning inspirational dinnerware for the international hospitality industry. They've been a longtime partner of Rosendale Collective, and they're getting ready to sponsor us with some incredible tableware for our new section on Rosendale Online, and we can't wait to see what they're going to come up with. Also, check out DryAger. DryAger offers a level of unprecedented quality for both restaurant and home dry aging programs. They make the most amazing dry aging meat cabinets in the industry. They are designed with sophisticated technology. They're made in Germany, and you can get incomparable taste of restaurant quality steak in the comfort of your own home. Thanks again to our following sponsors: Meat and Bone, Ovention Oven, Steelite International, and DryAger. Now, back to the show. Phil, how have you been able to like kind of balance the fame, notoriety of being a chef at, you know, prestigious restaurant, Boku's Door, but also, you know, the work-life balance, family? I see a lot of pictures of your great family on social media, and you know, I see you spend a lot of time with them. How do you have? Is it challenging to try to find that balance, or do you kind of set like a structured schedule? How have you been able to kind of deal with that? And has COVID, like during the pandemic, did any of that change your approach? You know, a lot of us kind of got thrust into this situation, all of us, where we were like at home a lot more. And when you get a taste of that, you're like, oh, well, do I have to work that many hours all the time? But mm-hmm. How do you kind of balance all of that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what you're referring to on the fame side of things, but
I mean, you're,
no,
I mean,
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
No, I think like, The work-life balance has always been a challenge. You know, we were 12 to 14 hours a day, you know, and I think that's, I think that the key thing for me is like life is like a, is the work-life balance is less like I have two equal scales and it's more like a pendulum, you know, it swings really hard to one side and then I just need to make sure it swings back, you know, and doesn't get stuck in one direction. But, you know, I'm fortunate, you know, my wife, she does pastry, you know, we went to school together and, you know, she understands and appreciates, you know, what I do. So having her support, I think has been critical, you know, for me. And I'm not really sure how that works without it, you know? But I think in addition to that, I think, you know, someone once said, like, if you say yes to one thing, you say no to something else, you know? And I think, for me, you know, prioritizing my family just means, you know, things might go slower, you know, for me in terms of the restaurant world or developing something or pursuing a dream or a task. And so, you know, just being okay with that, being happy with the balance I have. And, you know, I think the world of social media can be very misleading and you see everybody's like, oh, they're doing this and that, but you don't know what people are at on a personal level.
Right.
And so I feel like, you know, for me, family's kind of been that equilibrium that I've needed from just kind of going off into the culinary world and losing your mind, you know, in terms of like just being fully absorbed by that. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I feel like, you know, from my experience, you know, having that balance in life, like, is really critical, to, you know, just who I am as a person and, you know, what I've found, you know, to be, you know, what I get joy and happiness out of in life. And, you know, I think in the work world, you know, it's making sure that, you know, when I'm at work, I'm fully committed, you know, and we're fully into it. And then, you know, when I'm home, just learning how to turn it off. And, you know, I feel like I learned that mostly when I was doing Bocuse d'Or, you know, when I was in that training session, you kind of just, I recognized like I needed to like, just turn it off for like a full day, you know?
Right.
And there's a certain sort of, you know, rejuvenation / clarity of mind that happens, you know, when you're not just constantly on, you know, you can't sometimes pull yourself away from it and then come back to it, you know, with a fresh set of eyes. So, you know, I think that's the mistake that we make a lot of times in this business and why you see so much burnout and everything else is you're like, it's just like, we got to pursue the dream. We got to go. And then, you know, it's like a young, you know, kid who's really athletic and into sport. And by the, you know, they get into it at 10 years old. And by the time they're 16, they're like, I don't want to do it anymore.
You know? Right. Yeah. So, it's easy to burn out. Yeah.
Yeah. Important point that you made is that balance and being able to get home and just shut it off. You know, whether they're a competition chef or just somebody in the restaurant world, just being able to shut your brain off for a day or even a few hours is, you know, huge for mental health.
That's a good point, Rachel. Yeah. Also too, Phil, you said that, when people are posting stuff on social media, that it's like not always, you know, accurate. However, Rachel over here is actually in Italy right before, that's where she lives. And right before the podcast started, she like showed us the balcony and when she's posting all these amazing pictures on Instagram and everything, that is true. That's what it looks like all the time.
Instagram isn't always fake.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, she's the exception. It was like storming here last night and I was looking at, scrolling through her Instagram feed and I was like, wow, it doesn't look like it's storming over there. So, but but it's true though. I mean, a lot of people do, really kind of project all the things that, you know, you think people want to see on social media, but you know, be beneath the surface. And really, I think society's kind of gotten that way. In the Bocuse d'Or, that competition, you know, a lot of people didn't really see like all the hard days. And I know from my personal experience, and I also know spending time with you. I mean, I remember, you know, our trip to France with, you know, Skylar and you. I mean, it was like, you know, it's an emotional journey. And you've got all these adversities that you're trying to deal with, and then the tension and the pressure all boils down to, you know, 1 5-hour period of time, and you're in front of all your peers, and you know, the one little thing going wrong, spilling something or dropping something, it's an incredible amount of pressure. And you know, a lot of people just see the outcome, but they don't realize. And I think that's where this competition really is so much different than so many other cooking competitions, because that final sprint to the finish line is really a culmination of all of these months of work and practice. I remember coming out to California and staying at the house next door to Thomas's, which was his father's, I believe, at one point. And that was like the test kitchen there at the time. And I just remember seeing just the timelines and the list and everything. And it just was like, you know, it's intense. People don't see all that goes into that competition. They just see like, hey, you know, the accolades and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Chef, I have another question. You were mentioning what's present, everything that you're working on from there, and how it would be great to get more people in case they want to know more about not just the restaurant, but also to get trained for the competition, that it would be a possibility. Mm-hmm. So two questions. What is Bocuse Winners about, and what is their goal? And how can people get to work with you at the restaurant?
Well, the answer to the second question is really easy. Just send in your application.
Do they have to go to any website and they can fill up an application, or how do they have to do it about?
Yeah, I mean, we use Culinary Agents. You know, Indeed is also another platform, but Culinary Agents is good. You know, happy to share my email with this podcast as well for anybody who, you know, just wants to get a hold of me. But you know, I think yeah, I mean, Bocuse d'Or Winners. So somehow I ended up being the president of Bocuse d'Or Winners, which is basically the not-for-profit that represents the winners, past winners of Bocuse d'Or. And, you know, really it's kind of just a small group that, you know, we in the past has just kind of done some events and different things here and there. We're trying to really shape it into, you know, something that has a lot more meaning to it and, you know, also kind of has a sense of giving back. So, you know, part of that looks like, you know, trying to help some of the teams that are developing, you know, so we've supported Ukraine. It's really unfortunate that, you know, they were about to compete in their first Bocuse d'Or Europe, you know, finals, and obviously everything going on in the world prevented that. So, you know, just, we've been supporting, you know, actually their team and their organization and the families influenced by it. You know, and then as well, last year in 2021, we started the Social Commitment Award, which, you know, was really kind of the impetus for that was, I think all of us challenged in today's world, Bocuse d'Or is viewed as this sort of elitist competition that, you know, all these fancy chefs do and really has no bearing or relevance to, you know, the world around us. But I think, you know, that's an unfortunate perspective and really couldn't be further from the truth in terms of, you know, what the chefs who are involved do and their influence, you know, especially as you see, you know, not just in the restaurant world, but elsewhere. So, you know, we're working with Jose Andreas's group now. We're working on the Social Commitment Award, growing that, which is basically that, you know, it's not just, you know, here you are to compete, but, you know, what are you doing for your community? What's the impact your team's having? You know, you have a privilege being on this stage, you know, you have a privilege to represent your country. How are you using that to, right, you know, to better, you know, the community, the country you're in, a specific organization, et cetera. So it was great to see, you know, a positive response to that. And, you know, on top of that, it's, you know, it's such an amazing group of individuals that I've been fortunate enough to become friends with and build relationship with. You know, as I'm consistently involved in, you know, the different finals and national selections at times. So, yeah, I mean, I think in terms of, you know, right now we have two people who are keen on competing in 25 and 27, you know, kind of coming to join the restaurant and, you know, looking at, you know, I mean, it's, people see a candidate in a commis, but there's an army of assistants and other people that are really, really critical to our success. You know, Will Mouchet was my assistant along with Greg Schesser, and Will came back the second year to work with Matthew. And that was huge for us just to have that continuity, that experience, that been there, done that, you know, sort of mindset. So, you know, we're looking to build, you know, who are the team assistants, who's the team manager,
awesome,
who's the candidate commis, you know, so You know, and if all of that's born out of a team that that already exists, it's such a different feeling than,
right,
you know, patching a group of, you know, they might be talented people, but, you know, if your first moment ever working together is in the middle of it, you know, I think the challenge becomes a little bit deeper.
I was going to say, when he said 25, 27, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh my God, it's like 2013 seems like so long ago.
I know. Now. Tell me about it. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. It didn't seem that long until you said that. So.
Chef, just because I know there are some people that are going to ask this question, to put the first filter, do you get people with visas like J1s and or H1 or anything like that for the restaurant?
Yeah, we're actually looking to start that program. We've been trying to kind of dig into that a little bit. So, you know, I would love for that to be a possibility. You know, we're actually trying to create an exchange program amongst the Bocuse d'Or winners. So, you know, people who want to go to, you know, Geranium in Denmark, or they want to go to Serge Vera in France, or, you know, wherever it may be, go to René in Norway. So, you know, we all these great people that work for us, and at some point, you know, it's time for them to move on. And you know, how great would it be for them to have a clear path, you know, to one of these restaurants or vice versa, you know, someone who wants to come and work in the US. So that's a goal and pursuit of ours. So, you know, definitely happy to explore that and start that program here.
Awesome.
Wow. I think that's a great way to motivate and try to recruit people. Have you found that, like, after the pandemic, have you found challenges like being able to recruit and find people, or do you feel like you've gotten a lot of traction with kind of having this unique, I guess, kind of training curriculum, or that is an option, which I think is a great idea. I mean, you look at like social media and people are just, you hear people complaining like, oh, nobody wants to work and on all these different things. But, I mean, it's a real problem. It's definitely a real challenge. And I always think that you got to have a more, you know, you got to be more competitive and have a more compelling reason for somebody to want to come and work for you. It's no longer like just like a dollar more an hour. I think a training program sounds really interesting, but despite that, I mean, are you, you know, has it been challenging staffing, or do you feel like you're making some headway?
Yeah, I think a few answers to that question. I mean, you know, first of all, we're fortunate to be right down the street from the Culinary Institute of America. So, you know, we have a lot of students,
right? Yeah.
You know, here at Greystone, you know, in St. Helena. So, you know, we have a lot of students come work part-time for us. I think, you know, one of the things, you know, working with Skylar as my homie is just sort of the idea that, like, you know, as you know, we had challenges here and there, and especially towards the end. And I mean, he turned the corner and became a superstar, you know,
he
and,
did.
You know, just that sense of, you know, we can work with anybody, you know, we can teach anyone. You know, I had a guy come in, struggle as a dishwasher working one day a week, you know, and now he's an extern who's crushing it, you know, and he's all excited about what he's doing, you know, he was an aerospace major before, you know, wow. So, you know, it's just, I think we've had to sort of reinvent ourselves in terms of being willing to, you know, work with whoever comes through the door, be willing to teach them, be patient with that process. You know, I think Press is a great restaurant to get your feet on the ground in this business. And, you know, we just sent one of our cooks to the French Laundry, you know, and she came to us super inexperienced, but spent 2.5 years really working hard. And, you know, now she's kind of off to the next level, you know? So, you know, that's part of our goal here is to see that happen through what we do. You know, in terms of finding staff, I mean, it's a global epidemic. You know, when I'm at Bocuse d'Or in 2021 or in Budapest, you know, a few months ago, everyone's like, this is incredibly challenging.
And
I think, you know, we've had our ups and downs, but overall, I think we're doing really well comparatively to what I hear, you know, and I think the goal is like, you just have to give people a reason to come there instead of somewhere else. You know, you have to be the best, you have to be, you know, I mean, I, when I set out to do my restaurant, it was like, okay, I'm super focused on the guest experience and what that is, but we're going to be equally focused on the staff experience. You know, what do people say to other people when they work here, you know, why should they love to work here? And, you know, Napa Valley is super expensive. You know, I was looking forward to moving here from New York City, you know, back in 2007. And, you know, it was 1% cheaper, you know, I was like, crap. Yeah.
How is it working for Chef Philip this year? What would you say?
There's kind of a joke, you know, people are like, oh, I got PTSD. It's like Phil Tessier stress disorder, you know, but no, I think, you know, for me, I tell people, I'm like, you know, nothing we do here is easy. You know, you're here for a reason, you know, you're here to learn. And the reality is people, you know, we did like a review, we do a review on a regular basis. And I did a review for one of our cooks and she wrote down, she's like, I want to be pushed harder. She's like, I want to know what I'm doing wrong, you know? And that's really the reality of our challenge, right? Is to get the right people through the door. I mean, I've said no to so many people just because they're not a cultural fit for what we want to do. You know, A players want to be surrounded by A players. They don't want somebody that's got to be coddled right. to like get them over the hump. They got to be self-motivated. They got to want to do it. So when I'm firm and direct with them, you know, they understand where that's coming from. It's coming from a place of like, chef's making me better and I have a responsibility to the team, you know, and that's really what we need in the restaurant, because otherwise, you know, with the pace of which we work and the demand and the level of which we expect, you know, it's not fun for anyone. You know, I told these guys on Saturday night, I'm like, we're not having fun right now. I want to be having fun doing service. Like we've worked all day to make this beautiful food it should be fun and satisfying for us to like execute this and put it out for the guests tonight instead of like, you know, struggling with mise en place that's not right or not being set up on time and things like this. So, you know, I think the consistency, it's like, there's a lot of similarities to parenting and being a chef, you know, and, you know, consistency, boundaries, you know, setting expectations, you know, and I mean, I think our goal is to lead from a place where people want to follow rather than, you know, chasing people along. And, you know, it's a challenge, you know, I mean, I think people get behind it and they get excited about it. And then, you know, they have a string of bad days or, you know, something happens in their personal life or whatever it is. And I mean, you have to be a therapist. I'm basically a therapist, a real estate agent and a chef all at the same time. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's just what it takes now to really bring people here, to keep them here. And then, you know, we just changed the whole structure of how we are using our tip pool in the restaurant to bring better equity to the kitchen team. So that's going to be really huge for us. You know, we're hoping, you know, it's going to take probably a year and a half to really see it worked out because, you know, we need a slow change rather than a fast, harsh one. But that should bring a real positive shift that we hope can be a model, you know, for other restaurants to use because, you know, really elevate what we're able to do. And, you know, we can't ask people to come out here and suffer with us. You know, I earned $290 a week in New York City for a 50-hour week when I was working in New York. So I thought it was great. I was like, this is awesome. I'm in New York City. I'm working for Eric Repair at LeBrandine. I'm like, just punish me. But you know, that mentality is less visible today. So
yeah.
Apparently you have to drive a BMW as well as work at a restaurant. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Phil, what about like what you do to keep fit or at least, you know, to keep healthy, like mentally, physically, and is there anywhere that you kind of, you know, outside of even culinary that you look to kind of draw inspiration? You know, is there any thought leaders that you like, any books, is there anything you do to kind of stay inspired? Like how do you kind of keep the engine going? I mean, coming in every day and being able to execute and drive standards and inspire people. You know, what's that look like for you?
Yeah, I think it's actually a massively important piece of the puzzle for me. You know, like I know, especially beginning of this year till now, I mean, we had a lot of different challenges. My chef de cuisine was out for about 8 months last year, you know, with several things. So, I mean, we were taxed with that and then COVID, you know, coming through. So, you know, you're working 12 days in a row, just trying to keep things moving forward and just being willing to do that. But I think, you know, I've noticed when, you know, I just get totally like, I got to do this, I got to do this, that, and I, you sort of neglect that sort of self-care and like, you know, staying healthy on your own. Like you lose your ability to kind of, you know, people expect you to walk through the door every day and be that inspiration, you know, and be the standard. And, you know, if you're not in a great place mentally, physically, it's that much harder to do so. And so, you know, from a personal level, like I'm a huge soccer fan. So, you know, I'm always kind of listening to, tracking, you know, what's happening in the world and especially in Europe. And I think especially, you know, listening to, you know, the critique, et cetera, of the teams, and what you recognize is really just how important a great coach is. You know, how do you manage a group of superstars and get the best out of them and perform? And, you know, we've all seen great teams with great players underperform. And then also seen, you know, kind of mediocre teams outperform everyone else, you know, and there's, to me, that's kind of like, what does that look like? And that's sort of my exploration more so at the moment. You know, Simon Sinek is a great one, from a sense of, you know, building a positive team environment, building positivity in the workplace and how we view things differently. You know, he has several really great talks about the why behind what we do and, you know, the mentality behind with what we should be doing and how we do that together. So, you know, I think those are all really critical things. You know, I think the important thing that I've discovered for me is like, I'm just a goal oriented person. Right. So if I'm like, yeah, I'm going to get fit and go run, like it doesn't really happen if I don't have a goal. Like I'm going to run a half marathon in October.
Right.
And then it's like, oh crap, I can't fake this. You know, I got
yeah,
it. Like,
right. Yeah.
Like I'm getting too old to do that. Yeah. Something's going to fall yeah. apart. You know, so, you know, it's really that. And then, you know, it's like, okay, it's daunting at first, but once you get into it, you know, you get excited about it. And then when you do it, you're like, this is great. And then it's more motivation to continue. So, you know, I think finding the time to do so is really the challenge. And sometimes it means, you know, saying no to something, you know, and recognizing right. like, hey, my plate right now, maybe I can do that eventually, but my plate right now for where I'm at is full and being okay with that. I think that's, you know, I told people when I was younger, you know, my goal is to work for the best so that, you know, and work hard when I was young so I could have choices later on. You know, I think the hard thing is just learning to, or being willing to say no to those opportunities. I didn't realize how right. hard that would be
right.
yeah. as time came along. You just want to do everything, you know, which it seems like, Richard, you're always doing pretty much everything. So I don't know how you do it. But, yeah.
I say no to a lot of stuff, but you're absolutely right. That you but I say yes to a lot of stuff too.
He says yes, and then he's like, "Chris, go do this."
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, I think there is an element of being excited, and I think you know, I for me, like the creation and ideation. And the creation of something is exciting to me. And it kind of, and I think that in and of itself is like one of the things that kind of keeps me going is like the adventure aspect of it, like what's on the horizon. But I'm always fascinated, you know, with talking with different people that we have on the show. When we first started doing this, it was actually just kind of during the pandemic. And we just wanted to kind of, we thought it'd be a good way to kind of stay connected with people. But it's really been very inspiring and educational. And we've really gotten as much out of it as we think other listeners do. And, mm-hmm. you know, just talking with you and just listening, like what makes you tick, like how, you know, what gets you going and keeps you going is different than, you know, some of the past couple guests that we've had on, but there's parallels. There's similar things. I mean, you've got to be inspired. Like you can't fake the enthusiasm when you come in every day, like people mm-hmm. will see that, you know? So yeah, that's interesting.
Chef, is it Cristiano or Messi? Which one?
It's definitely Messi for me. Yeah. Well, so you have to understand, you know, I'm 5'7", right?
Oh,
so
okay.
Anytime there's a shorter athlete who's crushing it, like we're on the same team.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, people really take their soccer pretty serious. I don't know a lot about soccer. I was in Italy very early on in my career, and I guess they like won a game or something, and I like looked out my hotel room. I'm like, what the hell is going on? Like, people were like carrying a boat like in the town square and like throwing it into the
insane.
Yeah, I was like, are we under attack? Like, what's going on?
And yeah,
it was a soccer game.
I was in France for the 2000 Euro finals between France and Italy. And I was at Roger Vergès restaurant right outside of Cannes, and like it was tied like right at the last minute, and then France went on to win it in overtime. And I mean, we went downtown afterwards, and I was in the middle of a tear gas bomb, like we were running into the building. It was crazy. It was pretty wild.
It's but for real. I mean,
it's like nothing. There's nothing like that in this country.
Yeah, last summer,
we won the Euro Cup
last summer, and it was insanity. You couldn't even get downtown to go out. We tried.
Really?
But it was just like traffic was back all the way. People outside screaming crazy with their flags. Europeans and soccer is a big thing.
It's a football. Chef. Chef, do you suggest any books? Could be from the culinary world or could be something else.
Yeah, I think, you know, when we were doing Boku Store, one of the books that we read was the book Unbroken, you know, about the Louis Zamperini story. You know, this guy just crazy life story. And, you know, there's a movie out about it, actually came out ironically, like right as we were getting ready to go compete. So we went out and watched that together as a team. But, you know, just that story. There's another one called Boys in the Boat, which is about another Olympic story on a rowing team. And I love Eric Repair's book. I think it's called 32 Yokes. Just kind of fun comic relief in the culinary world. And just kind of his journey and just kind of that experience. I think all of these for me, like especially the first two, are just more kind of life experience, you know, and looking at how do people push past, you know, when they should give up, basically. You know, when you have that feeling of like, I should just give up right now. Like, this is too hard. Like, we're not going to make it. There's too many things against us. And just, you know, being able to kind of, you know, move past that point, to me is like really, really a critical thing to understand in human nature. You know, I think there's another book called Culinary Artistry, which maybe a lot of people don't know about, but, you know, it's from Andrew Dorenberg and Karen Page. I think it was published like early 90s. And, you know, that one's just it's an interesting book just in terms of how they've structured, like, you know, things that go together. This is for more of like a cooking perspective. I'm a super visual person. So, you know, just having a book that like when I read the ingredients and they kind of map things out from a season, things that go together, you know, consistently. It's kind of like I'm looking in the walk-in, and it's just something I use, you know, sometimes when I'm sitting at home trying to like think about what we want to do, you know, inspirationally, et cetera. So that's just kind of one I've used, you know, throughout my career, kind of on and off, you know, from a more creative perspective. I'm sure there's more I'm not thinking about right now, but those are a few good ones.
And I would add Chasing Bocuse to that list. Your book is, well, it is. I mean, it's really a glimpse into, more than a glimpse into what it takes to compete at that level. And, you know, I love the pictures and a lot of the stories.
Crazy.
And I think, and it's just really nicely done. So congratulations on that. What about the trends, any trends that you're kind of following that are out there in the culinary world? It's like that's kind of on your radar globally, regionally.
I mean, I think obviously the most obvious one is just sort of this whole, you know, vegan, vegetarian, you know, sustainability. I think it's really interesting and a challenge to all of us. You know, I think it's kind of understanding where your mindset is in it. You know, and I think that's the question is like, you know, how much of this is a trend? right? And an attention grab, and how much of this is like, what does this really look like, you know, for chefs at moving forward in a sustainable way? I think that's what I'm always looking at when I think, you know, when you use kind of the term trends, especially is, you know, I mean, I remember talking to Chef Keller, and I think one of the things about the French Laundry that is so critical is that it's not a trendy restaurant. You know, they don't jump to, you know, grab the next trend and start, you know, throwing it into the mix. And they're confident of who they are, what they do, and they consistently do that. And, you know, they have a 3,000 person wait list, you know, so it's working, you know? And, yeah. And so I think that's the key thing for us is always kind of getting excited about trends in a sense of like, hey, that's cool, interesting, you know, wow, that's neat to see. But like, what's separating the substance from the trendiness, you know, is really kind of, I think, the challenge. And I think something that honestly, not enough chefs do. You know, I think a lot of chefs just kind of be like, oh, it's cool, we're gonna do this and we're gonna do that. And then you realize like, okay, now you're part of the Nordic cuisine and that's your new label, but you're still kind of a copy of somebody else. You know, and what I don't want when somebody sees my food is like, oh, this is just like so-and-so who's better than me at doing it.
Right.
You know? Okay. So, you know, it's, I think one of the sous chefs from Journeyum was competing for Estonia and Bocuse d'Or against Rasmus Kofed and, you know, his candidate Ronnie. And I'm like, you're not going to beat Rasmus doing Rasmus, you know, you need to have your own style. You got to be different. And so I think that's where, you know, being aware of what's going on, seeing what's happening in the world, pulling some things, you know, like from those things, but then also kind of being confident enough in your own identity as well.
Chef, one last question about Bocuse. How do you pick the food? How do you decide what's going to be on the plate and the platter and everything else?
Yeah, that was an incredibly difficult question to answer when I started. You know, I remember sitting there, I was there with Martin Kastner, and it's kind of those, he's our designer from Crucial Detail, who, you know, I've become great friends with now. And, you know, we're just kind of looking at each other like, what do you want to do? And he's like, I don't know, what do you want to do? And yeah, eventually what I learned is like, you just have to start making something, you know, like, you're like, what am I excited about? Okay. Like, this needs to be American. Like, what's an ingredient that's American? It's like, well, Europeans hate corn. They think it's, you know, food for, you know, the pigs, you know, so let's do something amazing with corn that changes their mind about that, you know? And so then we spend the next 3 months exploring corn. You know? And I think, you know, I mean, the funny thing to me was always like, we worked Monday through Friday, and, you know, eventually worked, you know, 6 days and then eventually 7 days a week. But in the beginning it was, you know, I would take my weekend and just be thinking about like, what are we going to do when we get back? You know? And I would be like, depending on the week, you know, it'd be like, oh, last week was such a struggle. Like, you know, we didn't get much that we thought we were going to get done. Come back, oh, I got all these great ideas. And then you go in to like execute them, and you're like, they all suck. Like, and then you're sitting there like, what are we going to do? We just lost another week. And then, I mean, honestly, most of the time, some of our best ideas just came out of nowhere. We're like, well, I'll just try this and see what happens. You're like, oh, this is actually really good. You know? So I think being comfortable with failure, being comfortable with, you know, making something that's really terrible and recognizing that, you know, and then also on the flip side, recognizing when something's good and being willing to just stick with it. I think that's a challenge for me as a chef and with Bocuse d'Or, is just consistently doing the same thing over and over again. You know, like we have certain things on our menu, and, you know, we kind of change things seasonally, but, you know, that's the hardest thing for me. Like when I was doing Bocuse d'Or, I was so close to it, had done it so many times that I really relied on, you know, when other people would come in and taste the food, like just watching their first response, like not what they said afterwards so much, but what was their first response? You know, did their eyebrows go up? Were they excited about it? Could you tell that they immediately enjoyed it? And then that was the validation for me that we were on the right path. But, you know, the key thing for me was just, you just got to get started and then stick with it, and then know when you've gotten something good and stick with it. And then from there, it can still be a slow evolution and refinement. But, you know, I think some of the challenges we've had with teams in the past has been changing things too much, you know, too late in the game and creating challenges in that regard as well.
How long does it take? 2, 4, 6 years to train to get to Bocuse? to go for the winning.
Yeah. Well, the most important thing to recognize is that when you start competing for Boku's Door, you're not training anymore. You know, like you need to be a great chef at that point in time, right? Like you need to have all the skills in your toolbox in terms of cuisine and technique and ideas and discipline, you know, at that point. You know, that's why, you know, for me, when people, I've had other chefs who've competed for Boku's Door in the past and, you know, maybe took second or third in the US finals and they're like, oh, this is my dream. I'm like, is it? Like, if it's really your dream, then you're going to do whatever it takes to pursue that, which is you need to go work for the best. You need to go learn how to, step one is learn how to be a great chef, right? If you're going down a path of like, I'm going to do so many competitions and then I can get there, like that's going to be valuable to you, but you have to be able to do both, you know? And I came from the total opposite world. I'd never competed in anything when I competed in Boku's Door. In fact, we didn't even have the America selection. There was no US nationals because I was like the only idiot. I was the only idiot who applied, you know, so, you know, and so like we're competing against guys who've been doing Boku's Door for a decade, you know, and Skylar and I are like, this is like literally the first time we've ever competed in anything together. So, you know, I think that just is validation to the point of understanding food, being a great chef. And then it's really about pursuing, for me, it was pursuing the competition side. You know, Richard was a massive help and, how do you do this? How do you structure this? Like, how do you set up your training runs and what's teach me the competition side of this? And that's where you just have to be hungry for knowledge and be willing, even at that level, to be a student, you know, for those who've come before you and done other things that you haven't, you know? So, yeah, I think it's important to recognize that when you're the Boku's Door candidate, you're not like some superhero chef. You're a guy who's here to learn and here to like figure it out. And, you know, it's a journey and it's a process. I mean, you're spending over a year just going towards one goal and you have to have a sense of humor. You know, we just made a joke about the fact that, you know, we only get one shot at this, you know, 5.5 hours, one chance, anything goes wrong, we could be screwed, you know, and that can really get in your head. But, you know, we would just joke about it every day. You're like, hey, we only get one shot at this, guys, 5.5 hours. That's it. You know? And you have to be comfortable with the risk, you know, and comfortable with what's going to happen and have a sense of humor and enjoy the journey. You know, I think that's the important thing.
Well, I know we're really well said, and I know we're getting close here to wrapping it up with about an hour in. If anybody else has any last questions, feel free to chime in. I just had, first of all, I wanted you, Phil, to let us know where people can find out more about you. The website, and then, or social media. And then also, I didn't have a last question. I just had one last comment. One of the things I've thought very highly of you working with you over the years. And, you know, I've, as a result of doing Boku's Door and doing the competitions, you know, these, relationships always blossom and those experiences are the things that you remember. But a lot of times you remember a lot of the little things, not even the moment of like going on to the podium. And like, yes, that's a big thing. That's really cool. But one of the things I really, this says a lot about you was right after the competition, I knew you were like caught up in the, you know, I'm like, he's caught up in the whirlwind, just, you know, big announcement, making history, everybody's partying. We're having a, you know, it was like the night of, and the next day, everybody's just like over the top. And then I flew back like a day early or whatever after the competition. I don't know. I think maybe you were maybe you're spending a couple of days out there. I can't remember, but I was in New York and the phone rings my cell and it was you. And you just kind of said, hey, Richard, you know, just want to tell you safe travels back. And I want to thank you for all of the help with the training over the last several months. And I was like, wow, that really says a lot about, you know, who you are, that, you know, I mean, obviously you could have waited till we got back or sent an email back, but you know, that's one of the things I remember about you. And I really appreciate that. And, you know, people, you know, they see all the accolades and stuff like that, but really the person really, you know, you live up to.
Yeah. I mean, I think, the appreciation for the team, the recognition for the team effort, that's always the challenge. You know, I think everybody is willing to put in whatever it takes sometimes, but sometimes you need that. You know, sometimes you don't even know you need it. You know, that sort of affirmation that, you know, hey, you're a part of this. You're the reason that we're being successful. And, you know, I think, you know, I know, especially when we came back from that, you know, it's just like, you know, between you and Martin and everybody who had been part of that team, you're like, there's no way we would have done this on our own, like zero chance, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's a key part. I'm not actually great at it, to be honest. I came up in a world where like, if you're not getting yelled at, that's kudos, you know? So, you know, it's actually something we now talk about on a weekly basis, you know, right. How can we, you know, even if it's just like, hey, here's a gas card, you know, thanks for doing this or that, you know, or hey, awesome. I know you've been pulling extra weight, you know, so I'm working to be better at that consistently. So I'm glad. Yeah. Thanks for that.
And where can people find out more about you from the website or social media?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, social media is obviously, Instagram's the main thing I'm on. You know, I don't do too much Twitter, Facebook, all that jazz. So it's become too much work, but you know, I think the website for me is probably less so, at least on our website, you know, press website is probably a better way as well, but really social media is probably the best one.
Chris, Rachel, anything else?
Rachel.
This has been an extremely inspiring conversation. And if you ever are in Italy, please reach out. I would love to host you and cook here and show you the view I see from here.
Awesome. I was gonna ask you where you are.
If you ever need an excuse, I'm in Southern Italy in Calabria.
Okay.
So
okay.
Well, you're welcome anytime.
Hopefully I'll be talking to you soon because I'm gonna be going to Italy. Yeah.
Philip, great great connecting with you. Best wishes to your family, to your team, and wishing you continued success with everything, and look forward to seeing you here in person, hopefully soon. Thanks for giving us your time. It was a great conversation.
Thank you very much, Chef.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.
All right, man.
Thank you, Chef.
Bye-bye.
All right. Ciao.